I'm Mark Steiner, and today is Labor Day, so all these programs you're hearing today are pre-recorded, but we're bringing you some very special shows today, and this hour we're going to talk to Joe Glaeser. There's a book about him, by him, called Labor's Troubadour. He's been involved in the labor union for some 60 years, since 1944, as a labor educator, and as a man who sings the songs of labor, and he's joining us this hour to give us that history through song. And Joe Glaeser, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here on Labor Day.
And join us. You cannot join us here today, by the way, by phone, because it's, as I said, it's pre-recorded. But sit back and enjoy, and enjoy your Labor Day. Have a cup of coffee, have a beer, have a hamburger, and we'll talk. Or if you eat a veggie burger, whatever it is you're eating, and enjoy the show. So,
good. You got to cater to all types.
All types. Who knows? You know, meat, no meat. So, Joe, let me just kind of introduce you a bit to our audience. And this is the first time we've met, but we talked briefly. Joe is here with his guitar about your history, and you have been involved with labor unions, did you say, since 44?
Yeah, since 44, yeah. I spent about almost 20 years as a labor educator with the Textile Workers Union out of New York, which has now become part of the new union. It's a combination of the Men's Clothing Union and the Ladies' Garment Union and the Textile Workers, and they call it UNITE, which is a nice name, United Needle and Industrial Trades Union, something like that. That's the new union headquartered in New York. And I also worked with the Rubber Workers Union in Akron, Ohio, which was one of the major unions of the CIO in the 50s. And then later I worked for another 20 years with the U.S. Information Agency as a labor specialist. And I traveled all over the world, sang in 60 different countries, and just trying to explain what America's all about, especially labor, civil rights, all kinds of problems. We always have problems to explain overseas. Guys are always, what about this? What about that? What about this George Wallace down in Georgia, or wherever he was?
Alabama.
In the middle of France. So somebody asked me, what about some guy who had been lynched, actually, in Mississippi? Boy, that's a hard one to explain. But actually, since then, we passed the civil rights laws. That helped a lot. And I've been recording and singing songs for about close to 60 years, 58 years, to be honest.
So you've been playing labor songs that long?
Labor songs, yeah. I also do other stuff, but my specialty is labor songs, songs of protest, songs with a message. I leave the love songs and other songs to other people.
And in your private time.
Yeah, there are enough problems in the world to explain and sing about. But we also have songs with a little fun to them. They all are on, they're not all grim, you see. Marching songs.
The labor movement in this country in the late 19th century, early 20th century with the IWW, the Wobblies, Industrial Workers of the World. Industrial Workers? Yeah.
Industrial workers of the World. Yeah.
I mean, they, Joe Hill and T-Bone Slim, they were steeped in music. I mean, music was the way they got part of their message across from the very beginning.
Well, the Industrial Workers of the World were, I called the Wobblies for short. That's a long story. That'll take an hour to explain how they got the name Wobblies.
You can give us 3 minutes.
Well, some people thought they out in the West, in the lumber camps, they used to have Chinese cooks. And the story, one of the stories, which is probably not true, but it's a good story, they'd want to be in. The men were all members of the Wobblies, IWW. And presumably the cook couldn't speak his English too well. And he says, I wobbly wobbly too, you know. Other people say, well, the organization wobbled. At any rate, they called them the Wobblies. Organized in 1905. Still around. They still have an office. And one or two people working for them. But one time they had a lot of strength. But the most important thing about the Wobblies, you were right, they used music. They had one of their great songs, still sung today. It's Solidarity Forever. It's the anthem of the labor movement.
And that came out of the Wobblies.
Oh, yeah, 1915 in the coal fields by Ralph Chaplin, who was their, he was the editor of their paper and one of their organizers. I just do a verse and a chorus.
Please do a couple of them, as many as you
when
like.
When the union's inspiration through the workers' blood shall run, there can be no power greater anywhere beneath the sun. Yet what force on earth is weaker than the feeble strength of one? But the union makes us strong. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. Solidarity forever. For the union makes us strong. Goes on for four more verses.
And that started in 1915.
1915, and that's, what is it, 75, 85, 95 years later, still being sung around. I was lucky enough, I met Ralph Chaplin when he was 72. He wrote that when he was must have been about 20-something. And I introduced him to a meeting of lumber workers out in Portland, Oregon.
Did they know who he was?
Oh, well, I explained to him. They didn't know he was, you know, 50 years before. These guys weren't even born. And they might, some of them might have heard about him vaguely, and he made one hell of a talk. And he was at that time the Historical Society of the State of Washington had hired him as a consultant to do some work on the history of labor. But up to that time, they hadn't done much on it. And he tells these fellows, I can still see him. He was a fireball, 72. Boy, he must have been a killer when he was 25 or 22. And he says, you walk up and down the halls of the Washington State Historical Society. They have these great portraits. This is the way he talked. All the great men who built this state of Washington. They have the big industrialists. They have the lumber barons. He goes on. They have the generals. But do they have a worker? No. Do they have a lumber worker? No. Do they have a fisherman? He said, they never built the state of Washington. Only the big shots. Boy, they loved it, you know. I tell you, that's, anyway, I have that story in my book. And I was fortunate to meet a lot of these interesting characters in my life and historical characters. And I worked them, you know, into my book and the stories and the music and so on. Anyway, I was just, we sang that song. I said, Mr. Chaplin, we're going to, I didn't call him Ralph yet. We're going to, and we sang the song. And he was really moved. He said, boy, when I wrote that in my living room in Chicago on the floor, I was looking for a tune, he says. And he says, I had the words, I was looking for a tune. He says, I got a good one. Glory, glory, hallelujah, you know. And he says, I didn't think they'd still be singing it. This was
it's amazing later. That there was a spirit then that came from the songs and the great oratory, and somehow we're missing in today's world. There's labor movement anywhere. We seem to be missing that kind of power.
Well, you got to have, you know, who's the one that said a singing army is a winning, a fighting army or something. Music is very, it's not the only thing, you know. If the other guys have all the guns and you have all the music, you know who's going to win. But the movements, so music is very important in movements, even in war, you know, over there, over, you know, you hear that, boy, you're ready to pick up the gun and start marching, you see. And the civil rights movement, I don't know if they could have done it without the music. That kept them going, you know.
Absolutely.
When they put them in jail, they were singing, and on the picket line, they were singing, and when they were beating them, they were singing. So there's a great, great series. They were more than 100 great civil rights songs, you know.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the songs are just, if you miss me at the back of the bus, you can't find me nowhere. Come on up to the front of the bus, I'll be sitting up there. Hey, I'll be sitting up there. I'll be sitting up there. On up to the front of the bus, I'll be sitting up there, and so on, you know.
Now, one of the other great wobbly songwriters, though, before we get civil rights too deeply, was Joe Hill.
Well, Joe Hill was the most famous of the wobbly songwriters. They had a number of good ones, just T-Bone Slim and Ralph Chaplin. But Joe Hill was probably the most prolific and probably the best. He certainly was the most famous. And the reason he was the most famous was he was executed at a very young age. That's one way to become famous. I don't recommend it.
By a firing squad in Utah.
A firing squad in Utah, 1915. That's a good date to remember. November 19th.
Pretty slim evidence, if I remember reading history.
Well,
correctly.
It was a very bad trial. Yeah. It would have been thrown out these days. Very thin evidence. And but they got him. He was a wobbly and a radical. He was a hellraiser. But he wrote some wonderful songs. He was a great poet. He was a poet, you know, came over from Sweden as a young man. He must have learned English in a hurry. And he managed the idiom very, very well. There was once a strike See if I can remember this thing. Unemployment in San Francisco. He was in jail at the time in Utah. And they said, can you write us a song? And at that time, the Tipperary was a big thing. And he wrote this song, well, it's a long way down to the soup line. It's a long way to go. It's a long, long way down to the soup line. The soup is thin, I know. Goodbye, good old pork chops. Farewell, beefsteak rare. It's a long, long way down to the soup line. But my soup is there. That's pretty good for a Swedish immigrant.
Not bad. And he wrote, of course, he wrote that poem the day that he was shot that he became very famous for.
He wrote this great poem that he says, when I die. Well, first of all, he says, when I die, he wrote to the Wobblies, he wired them. He says, I want my body dragged to the Wyoming line because I don't want to be found dead in the state of Utah. He was really good. And he says this in last words. He had a lot of last words, you know. He says, don't mourn for me, organize.
Don't mourn, organize.
And then he says, scatter my ashes all over the world, he says, so flowers will grow. That was part of his poem. Of course, the Wobblies, who were very colorful, though they weren't good at building stable unions, that's another story, but they were great at running strikes and singing songs and carrying on. And on May 1st, 1916, they put his ashes, little bits of his ashes in different envelopes, marked in different states, Australia, England, where they had some members, and they scattered the ashes on May 1st. But there is no ashes scattered in the state of Utah because Joe Hill said, I don't want to be found dead here. But he was some of his songs still live. One of his famous songs was, which I've recorded, and I sang, this is interesting, when I was in Sweden, I was with the U.S. Information Agency talking about America, trying to explain America. And one day my guide there, he says, we're going to have a special day today. I said, where are we going? He says, follow me. You know, he drives. We're going to Gävle, G-A-V-L-E. It's pronounced Gävle. Gävle. I said, isn't that where Joe Hill was born? He says, yeah, we're going into the house where Joe Hill was born. It's now a museum. Boy, I come there.
Museum of Joe Hill in Gävle, huh?
Yeah. And they had it set up. They had the guys there in the radio station. They gave me a poster. I gave him a record. When I sang songs about Joe Hill, I sang the song Joe Hill. And it was a wonderful, it was really a moving affair. I got a feeling Joe Hill was listening up there and from the rafters. It was kind of an interesting house.
Long-haired preachers come out every night. Try to tell you what's wrong and what's right. But when asked about something...
You want to tell us a little story about that song?
Yeah, that Pie in the Sky, if there were any good Baptists or Methodists out there, you'll recognize the song, We Will Meet in the Sweet By and By.
Right.
That's the tune.
Right.
But Joe Hill and the Wobblies, they operated a lot in the Skid Rows, trying to organize people. They had lumber workers who had come to town, or sailors, or migratory workers, and especially out in California. And they would hear the Salvation Army, which they call, in the song, he called the Starvation Army. But we want to be fair, the Salvation Army has done a lot of good work. I don't want them to get a bad rap out of this. But they would be on the corners singing these old hymns, you know. We will meet that sweet by and by, you know. Mm-hmm. Everything's going to be great up above. And the Wobblies didn't go for that. They called that pie-in-the-sky religion. And they believed in what they called pie-in-the-stomach religion. You know? So they would take these tunes, and Joe Hill was very good, take these wonderful tunes, and they change the words and get pretty sarcastic, you know. This became one of his great popular songs, and you can still hear it around different places.
I'm just curious, did you grow up in a labor family?
Yeah, well, my father was a member of the Garment Workers Union. Now, as I point out in my book, by the way, I have to say, I have orders from my publisher. I always mention University of Illinois Press.
Okay.
It's quite an honor. They have a series called Music in American Life. and they have over 100 books in that series. And they asked me to do what would in effect would be the labor song book, because they have songs, the Irish songs and Yiddish songs and gospel and country music, mm-hmm. and all kinds of stuff. And this is their labor publication. So it's kind of an honor. University of Illinois Press. It can be found, I hope, anywhere. But at any rate, my father was a member of the Garment Workers Union and the International Ladies Garment Workers Union, which organized women's clothing and dresses and so on. At one point, was a very powerful union of over 400,000 workers. But now when you go in a store and you buy a dress or a shirt, you know where it's made, you know.
Right.
It's not made in Baltimore or in New York. It's made in Sri Lanka or China or in Mexico or someplace. So that union has shrunk quite a bit, and so did the men's clothing union and my own union, the textile workers, and they joined into a union called
Unite.
Unite, yeah. So, and they're working in that field. But as I was saying, my father, he was a solid union member, but we had 7 kids in the family, and he didn't have a lot of time to be a big agitator. They're just solid kids. So we grew up, we knew union was a good thing for working people, period. You know, you never crossed the picket line, period. There was no question about it. And that's the way it was. So, and then I went to college, and I ultimately studied labor. I started out in mathematics and physics, believe it or not. But my wife was studying labor economics out at the University of Wisconsin, and I took a look at her books. I said, boy, this beats the hell out of these statistics and mathematics and quantum mechanics. I said, this is much more interesting reading about the Wobblies and the heroes of Mother Jones and the strikes and the struggles. So I switched into labor, into studying labor, and I was hired as an educator. I tell the story, you know, when you're young, you're not too smart. There's no reflection on young people. But, you know, as you get older, you learn a lot of things
yes, you
didn't know. Somebody said youth is wasted on the young, you know. But at any rate,
just beginning to understand that.
At any rate, I thought I knew a lot about labor, which I did. I read a lot of books, and I thought I knew a lot. And when I was hired by the textile workers, I was, I think, 24 or 26, something like that. As an educator, I thought, well, I'm going to start educating these guys. My boss, who was a fellow named Larry Rogan, very wise, he says, first thing you do, you go over to Passaic, New Jersey. We got some organizing going on. Learn about the labor movement. And I started knocking on doors and meeting people. And I really learned from the bottom up, you know. I knocked on a door and I said, well, I'm from the union. Get the hell out of here, you communist, you. I said, boy, this is going to be harder than it was in graduate school. But anyway, I worked with workers all over. And with my music, I was able to get into a lot of different unions. Because people heard about, you know, that Joe Glazer sings those labor songs. Can he come to our convention, steel workers, auto workers?
What kind of songs did you sing back then to them?
What?
What kind of songs did you sing then?
Well, there's all kinds of rally songs you sing. Keep the troops moving and excited. We shall not be moved. Just like a tree that's planted by the water. We shall not be moved. Hey, the union is behind us. We shall not be moved. The union is behind us. And if you're singing to the teachers, you say, the teachers are behind us. Or if it's letters, hey, the AFT's behind us. You're working the proper thing. And then proper words and letters. And they sing, we're going to roll. We're going to roll. We're going to roll the union now. We're gonna roll, 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 we're gonna roll. We're gonna roll the union up. Hey, if the boss is in the way, we're gonna roll it over him. Roll it over and so on, you see. Now, wherever, if the union's there, and let's say if you're with the UAW and you're fighting Ford, you say, if Henry Ford is in the way, you can adapt.
You can name anybody you like and adapt it anywhere you want.
Yeah, you can adapt the song so that they fit the occasion. That's the key thing. There's a song for every occasion. I wrote a song called Automation about factory, where this guy goes into the factory and there's nobody there, just machines and so on. And he goes up to see the boss, and the boss is a robot. And he goes up to see the president of the company. The president's running out of his office because it says a mechanical executive has just come in to take his place.
Give us a piece of that song, Mr.
Rock. Well, and then it winds. This is the last verse. I went home, home, home to my ever-loving wife, told about the factory. She kissed me, she hugged me, she cried a little bit as she sat on my knee. Now, I don't understand all the buttons and the bells, but there's one thing I will say. Thank the Lord that love's still made in the good old-fashioned way.
That's great.
Yeah, that's the last line of it. But I was just saying, and I adapted that. I sang to store clerks in the United Food and Commercial Workers. That's one of the big unions now in the AFL-CIO. And I made it, I adapted it to a store. Instead of going to the factory, I went into the store and there was nobody there, nothing but machines and so on.
As a young labor organizer, musician, I mean, were you inspired by the likes of Woody Guthrie, Pete Seeger, Leadbelly, and Cisco Houston, those
yeah.
guys?
Yeah, Woody Guthrie did a lot of, in the early days of labor songs. He was out west, he worked with the migratory workers. He was a bit of a character, you know, Woody. I mean,
I know, I went to school with Arlo.
With Arlo?
Yeah.
Arlo was his son. Yeah, Sam sung with Arlo. Interesting lad. That's interesting. I had felt when I did some programs with Arlo, and he was, as happens, of the sons of famous people. His manager, as a matter of fact, we did a program together in Wisconsin. His manager says, when you introduce him, don't say anything about Woody. I said, why not? I had a nice introduction. No, he doesn't want to. He's on his own, you see? He doesn't want to.
But now he does. He talks a lot
now
about
Woody. He got over that. He and got older, you see.
And his sister Nora.
And he appreciated
it.
Yeah.
Exhibits
sure,
together.
The young guy says, ah, look, I'm Arlo. Woody was a great character. He says, everybody tells me how good I am, but I can't make a living for my family. Because he had one time a good job up in the Starlight Room, I think it was, in New York. But they wanted him to wear overalls and act like a hillbilly. Even though he talked a bit that way, he was
from Oklahoma.
Well, yeah, but he was a pretty shrewd guy, and he didn't want to be just an old stupid country boy. And he says, I took the elevator down to the USA, and I never came back. And in his book, I think he was getting at that time.
Bound for Glory?
What?
Bound for Glory.
Yeah, Bound for Glory, yeah. Right. But he was really funny. When he got into the hospital with this terrible disease, Huntington's disease.
Yes, I remember.
And he had to fill out a form. He wasn't good on forms, you know, Woody. Yeah, religion. He puts down all. And the guy says, no, you got to put down Jewish, Catholic, Protestant. He says, all or nothing. You know? Of course, one of his songs that... labor songs that has really lived and has become one of the half dozen most popular songs. There once was a union maid. She never was afraid of the goons and the ginks and the company finks and the deputy sheriffs that made the raid. She went to the union hall when a meeting it was called. And when the company boys came round, she always stood her ground. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die. And now it's interesting. The last verse of the original, if I can do that, it's very important. He says, you gals who want to be free, take a tip from me. Get you a man who's a union man and join the ladies' auxiliary. It's interesting, in the first two verses, this gal is a union maid. She's striking and walking. She works in the factory. But in the third verse, she's in the ladies' auxiliary, which did good work, but they made coffee and they were helpers, you see, in the back. You know,
times have changed.
Well, yeah. Oh. And we sang it that way. I sang it for years. But the young women,
they don't want to hear that.
They say, that's no good, no good. And so it's now we sing, we modern union maids are also not afraid to walk the line, leave our jobs behind. And we're not just the ladies' aid. We work for a higher pay, and we will show the way We're workers too, the same as you, and fight the union way. Oh, you can't scare me. I'm sticking to the union. I'm sticking to the union till the day I die. Interesting, huh?
Now, do you still go around singing to union halls and union meetings?
Boy, I'm singing all over.
Are you?
Now, this is being taped now on Labor Day, but you know where I'm going to be actually on Labor Day while this is being shown?
Where?
I'm going to be in Evansville, Indiana. That's a big labor town, and they have a historic Labor Day parade. And I'm going to be, if you'll pardon the expression, the Grand Marshal. That's a big honor. They've had people like Mother Jones and Samuel Gompers and a lot of people.
And now Joe Glazer.
Now Joe Glazer. It's over 100 years
this
parade. And it's a tremendous tradition. It's on the river in southern Indiana. If anybody's listened to this program, if you get to Evansville, look us up there.
Maybe it's a place to go visit next Labor Day.
And I've sung at the last Saturday. I sang at the Kennedy Center. I'm singing union rallies, senior citizens, all kinds of agitate all over for the good causes.
When you talk about Labor Day, this September we're in Labor Day, but Labor Day originally in America was May 1st.
Well, that's
you want to
yeah.
The history of this day is different.
Long story here, but I'll try to telescope it. The first Labor Day parade was in New York City, 1882, September the 5th, no less. They said we'll have Labor Day. They just started it, you know. But then in 1890, you know, I'll get back to May Day in a minute. In 1894, the U.S. Congress passed the law making the first Monday in September Labor Day. And since then, it's been the official Labor Day. However, you get to May 1st. Early in about late 1880s, the International Working Men's Congress met in Europe, and they picked May 1st as the International Working Man's Holiday. And in May 1st, 1886, actually, it was a big movement for the eight-hour day, big strike in the U.S. At any rate, May Day became the official working man's holiday all over the U.S., but all over the world. But in the U.S., Labor Day took its place. You had some radical unions still marching on May 1st in the early days, but it's pretty much gone. But you go to Europe, May 1st is a big holiday. That's the Labor Day. Everything is closed down.
Didn't that commemorate the Haymarket Massacre?
Massacre was actually May 3rd, but it was May 1st is when they started this big strike in Chicago. Well, it was a nationwide strike for the eight-hour day. Now, we talk about that. Let me do a song about the working hours, because when you talk about Labor Day, we ought to remember where 8 hours is pretty standard now. If you work more than hours, 8 hours, you should be getting time and a half. But in the old days, you know, they said you worked in a factory. It was just like on the farm. You worked from can't see to can't see. You know, as long as it was light, you're out there and you stayed there until the sun went down. And the textile workers, particularly, they come off the hills in Carolinas and other places, and they spend 12, 14 hours in the factory.
Well, we have about a minute and a half to break. Why don't you take us to break with this next song?
Okay, that's good, because it's a quickie, and it's called It's Hard Times in the Mill, My Love. So wake up at 4:30 every morning at 4:30. The cooks are hopping on the floor. It's hard times in the mill, my love. Hard times in the mill. Every morning just at 5, you gotta get up whether you're dead or alive. Hard times in the mill, my love. Hard times in the mill. And every morning at 6 o'clock, it's 2 cold biscuits hard as a rock. Hard times in the mill, my love. Hard times in the mill. Well, the spinners are cussing, the weavers are crying. Every morning at 9:30, it's hard times. Hard times, hard times in the mill. Well, it ain't enough to break your heart. You have to work all day and at night it's dark. And it's a hard times in the mill, my love. Hard times in the mill.
That was an interview we taped with the legendary labor singer Joe Glazer in 2002, 4 years before he passed away. Today, we remember Joe and the other leaders of the labor movement on this Labor Day. Stay with us after this short break to meet some local singers who've taken the torch from Joe Glazer, the Charm City Labor Chorus. You're listening to The Mark Steiner Show on Public Radio WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. We'll be right back. The Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite Magazine's new e-zines. You can get your weekly fix of arts and culture, food and drink, home and design, style and shopping, and green and sustainable topics. Updated information can be delivered to your inbox. Registration is available at urbanitebaltimore.com.